This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. There's a scientist in the Northern Panhandle who has gained international attention, studying crayfish. Corey Nolinger met up with him and some of his students and colleagues to see what it is that drives him to be so passionate about crawdads.
Everybody loves crayfish. Anybody that grew up near a creek knows what a crawdad is. And so I basically have the dream job of every 10-year-old in West Virginia.
Zach Loafman has made a storied career as a naturalist and a scientist by not letting his inner 10-year-old boy grow up. He has discovered, identified, and named 10 new crayfish species here in North America, and shared his fascination for the species with countless students, including current West Liberty graduate student Audrey Sykes.
His classes are fantastic. He's easily one of the most passionate and enthusiastic and memorable professors I've ever had. And the way he feels about crayfish is inspiring.
He is very passionate about what he does. I'm sure that you've seen this. You can hear it in his voice. He has this booming voice that you can hear him teaching down the hall.
West Liberty University Chair of the College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics, Karen Kettler, isn't the only one who recognizes Loafman's passion for the natural world. His research has been featured in Science Magazine, National Geographic, and in the neuroscience publication Neuron, among others. While he's built a name for himself through crayfish research, he says he was more of a snake person growing up. And you can tell he still really loves snakes because he has a bunch of them in his office. His fascination with crayfish stemmed from a conversation with his advisor.
I was driving home from my thesis site with Dr. Polly, and he said to me, "I've been watching you. You really like natural history. You don't have to study snakes. You study something that nobody else has ever really put much effort into." And there have definitely been people that have studied crayfish, but nobody's really dug into their natural history and ecology intensively from the perspective of a naturalist. And it was just a question of timing. And the next thing you knew, I was spending way more time reading about crawdads than I was snakes.
Loafman says his career as a professor and biologist has stemmed from a lifelong curiosity with the natural world.
Naturalists, and that's what I would classify myself as first and foremost, we have a very different perspective, it seems, of the natural world in that when we see animals, we just immediately start asking questions. When I see a snake or I see a crayfish now, especially a crayfish species I haven't seen before, you know, my initial response to that is not, you know, what is my hypothesis going to be? It's literally, wow, that's cool. And then I immediately follow that up with, well, you know, what species are you?
Dean of the College of Sciences at West Liberty University and one of Loafman's former professors, Robert Kreisberg, thinks this insatiable curiosity is what brings Loafman so much success.
He is extremely good in the field. I mean, he didn't get to where he is. I'm going to say he's probably the number one research biologist for crayfish. And there are quite a few of them now.
Well, Zach Loafman is a very talented academician, but he's also very animated and very lively, very easy to talk to, but incredibly passionate about his work with the crayfish. And what I've soon discovered and heard about his reputation, and not just his reputation locally or in the state, his reputation extends nationally and internationally.
The reputation that West Liberty University President Stephen Greiner mentions is not only for Loafman as a field biologist, but also as an educator. Dr. Loafman was named West Virginia Professor of the Year in 2014. He's been teaching graduate and undergraduate students for 11 years at West Liberty. He says he loves that almost more than he loves looking for crawdads in the stream.
Whenever I get outside and I'm teaching, or I'm doing the field work, or I'm bouncing down a dirt road in a van full of college kids that's my job to teach and, you know, turn them into the next generation of conservation biologists, that is nothing but wonderful.
Loafman takes students all over the region, from the northern panhandle where he found a red crayfish with bright blue features, to the southern coal fields where he discovered a new kind of crayfish. This is where he describes the fun that you sometimes get to have while naming crayfish.
I described a crayfish that's endemic to the Tug River, which is shared between Kentucky and West Virginia, and then there's a tiny little bit of it that makes its way into Virginia. And I described a species of crayfish there and gave it the Latin name Canberra's Hatfield Eye. So named it after that Hatfields of infamy. And then you get to, you know, do a little bit of jabbing. I'm a West Virginian, so of course I'm going to name it Hatfield Eye instead of McCoy Eye. But it does cross the river into Kentucky, which is kind of fun.
Rain or shine, day or even in the middle of the night, when a good flashlight can illuminate the beady eyes of a crayfish, Loafman is ready and willing to lead people into streams and fish around for crawdads. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Corey Nollinger in West Liberty.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Rain and thunderstorms today. Some heavy rain is possible with highs in the 60s, 70s, and low 80s. Scattered rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Partly sunny in the north tomorrow, mostly cloudy in the south. A chance of rain and thunderstorms statewide with highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by WVU Medicine, children's pediatric care for West Virginia's children. For decades, the Cheat River and its tributaries were known for the telltale bright orange discoloration of acid mine drainage. 25 years later, the river is on the verge of a nearly complete restoration. Much of the success is a result of a decision among regulators, scientists, and a local conservation group to treat the population problem as an entire watershed instead of mine by mine. Brittany Patterson takes us to Preston County to learn more.
Paul Zimkevich, director of West Virginia University's Water Research Institute, is standing on a bridge looking out at Big Sandy Creek. It's a sunny afternoon, perfect for kayaking, and the creek, which runs into the Cheat River, is clear. But 25 years ago, this water was orange from acid mine drainage.
But I have a picture of this from, say, mid-1990s, and all of those rocks were white. On this side, from all the aluminum coming down Sovereign Run, and it was white the whole way down here on the left, and on the right, it was all orange from the iron coming down the rest of the Big Sandy. But look at this is a fishery now. And it was completely dead back then.
Across the 1,400-mile watershed, more than 340 abandoned coal mines feed pollution into the Cheat River and its tributaries, like the Big Sandy. The bright orange and sometimes milky white pollution contains iron, aluminum, and manganese. It forms when pyrite, buried deep underground with coal, is exposed to air and water. Acid mine drainage affects rivers and streams from Alabama to Pennsylvania, and an estimated 300,000 abandoned mines dot Appalachia, all possible sources of this metal-laced water. State regulators have limited federal dollars to ensure water coming from these mines meets federal Clean Water Act standards. Zimkevich says that for decades, the conventional thinking was largely to treat the pollution one mine at a time.
You can throw almost infinite amounts of money trying to treat point sources in a watershed like this and not make any impact at all on the quality of the stream because the abandoned mines dominate the whole picture.
So instead, here in the Cheat River watershed, regulators, scientists, and a local conservation group wanted to try something different. They decided to approach the pollution holistically. The annual Cheat River Festival bills itself as a celebration of new life as winter gives way to spring. On a cloudy Saturday in May, hundreds of people filed into this grassy knoll in Albright in Preston County. Impervious to the rain, a group of small children danced to the bluegrass streaming from a covered pavilion. The smell of wood-fired pizza and barbecue fills the wooded clearing just a few hundred feet from the Cheat River. The Cheat was known to be polluted for decades, but then two blowouts at the active TNT mine poured millions of gallons of acidic water into the main stem of the Cheat. Fish were killed 16 miles downstream in Cheat Lake.
This made national news, and the Cheat was named one of the most endangered rivers in the country in 1995.
That's Amanda Pitzer, the executive director of Friends of the Cheat, which for 24 years has hosted the festival to celebrate the river and raise money to restore it. The local conservation group was formed by a motley crew of river guides and enthusiasts in 1994 to deal with that and legacy acid mine pollution. More than two decades later, they have a reason to celebrate.
Not only have we restored the Cheat River main stem, the whole thing, you know, headwaters to mouth, but we're actually on the verge of reconnecting the lower 3.4 miles of Muddy Creek with the Cheat and the trout fishery that is upstream of that.
Toddie Steelman studies watershed restoration and is one of the founding members of Friends of the Cheat. She says the collaboration between Friends of the Cheat and state and federal regulators has been a 25-year experiment.
You know, having the university close by and invested was a huge stroke of luck. Having several sources of financial support in the 90s, you know, has really been essential.
It started with the innovative thinking on the part of state regulators. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection created an alternative clean water permit that allows the agency to address stream-wide water quality rather than treat individual pollution sources. Scientists at WVU set out to figure out how to treat acid mine drainage across a watershed. Standing in a grassy clearing overlooking this forested valley, it's just possible to see the entry to a now abandoned coal mine here in the headwaters of Sovereign Run, a tributary of the Big Sandy, which runs into the Cheat. Here, Zimkavich and his team built a series of limestone-lined ponds and channels at the mouth of the mine, where water laced with metals pours out. The limestone, literally tons of it, raises the low pH acid water.
We were able to knock off something like 80% of the acid load, most of the iron, and the idea was to put a lot of these all over the watershed.
During the first Cheat Fest in 1995, Friends of the Cheat and Zimkavich and his team took federal officials from the Interior Department and Office of Surface Mining to see the treatment system here at Sovereign Site 62. Federal regulators were impressed, and they decided to allow states to dole out more federal money to local organizations to clean up acid-impaired streams. Steelman says Friends of the Cheat took on much of that work.
You need a local champion that's going to see it through because it's truly a labor of love. So it really is about love of the land, love of the river, love of community. And I would say that's really what has characterized the group over time.
It takes a lot of heart, but it also takes a lot of money to clean a watershed. Since 2000, the EPA has contributed more than $5 million to the watershed. DEP has spent more than $13 million constructing and maintaining not only passive ponds and streams lined with limestone, but also active treatment options. And now, one of the last treatments is almost in place. Once fully operational, a treatment plant near the TNT mine will take care of the last major polluted stretch of the watershed. You can see the TNT treatment plant just off Route 26 near Albright. In some ways, it can best be described as a dishwasher for dirty mine water. Larry Riggleman is the regional director for the Northern Region of DEP's Office of Special Reclamation. He has been working in this watershed for years, and he says once this plant is fully operational, Muddy Creek, which has been the single largest contributor of acid mine drainage to the Cheat River for years, will be clean. What will that mean for the whole river?
I don't know if you can put it in words. I mean, to be able to bring that stream back to life, which I can't tell you when the last time it was that it was had life, but from an environmental standpoint on the Cheat, it's huge. I think from a recreational standpoint, with people wanting to fish, kayak, things of that nature, I think that's huge. So I think it's really very important that this gets done. I think it'll be very successful.
Back at Cheat Fest, Amanda Pitzer with Friends of the Cheat says despite the momentous achievement, there is still a lot of work to do to overcome a reputation of pollution.
If you came here in the 80s and you paddled the river and you remember it being orange and awful, and then someone tells you, oh my gosh, I went and I caught walleye, you know, down at Jenkinsburg, they'll be like, oh, get out of here, you know. So I think it just takes time.
Pitzer says Friends of the Cheat has no plans to stop working anytime soon. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.